Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time you are listening to this, wherever you are listening to this. This is Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. How are you guys? It's the end of January 2024. How time flies. And this is episode 41, the Super Bowl of Wrestling. And I am super excited. We have a lot to get to. I did a lot of research on newspapers.com to look at the history of the Super Bowl of Wrestling and a little history of the Super Bowl in general. And then I've got two great programs from 1976, the week before and the month before the Super Bowl of Wrestling in Dallas Stadium in Irving, Texas. One is from the Sportatorium, July 1st, 1976, just a couple of days before the big show. And the other one is from Northside Coliseum a month before, Monday, May 17th, 1976. And they both talk extensively about the big show. And it's funny to use the term the big show because, as you all, I think everybody knows at this stage, it's like a running joke on radio shows and, you know, just in general in society now, the big game is coming up, right? That's what you call the Super Bowl if you don't have the licensing fee to be the official sponsor of the Super Bowl. If you're not an official licensed partner of the NFL, then you're not allowed to use the term the Super Bowl. And it just speaks to A, I guess, the outlaw state of wrestling, and B, the way that things catch on over the course of time. Because in 1967, when the AFL-NFL championship game, I probably have that in the wrong order, the NFL-AFL championship game was played at the end of that season, it wasn't even called the Super Bowl, you know? And it was Lamar Hunt that sort of coins the phrase, apparently, the Kansas City Chiefs owner, appropriately enough, as the Chiefs are in Super Bowl 58 against the 49ers. And Lamar Hunt, I guess his son had a Super Bowl, which makes me smile because I love Super Bowls and I had a bunch of them when I was a kid. And I actually, my stepdad brought up a bunch of stuff. I think I told you guys this with the wrestling magazines, but part of it was just a bag of old Super Bowls, including the great big ones that were the, you know, they had the little ones you could get for 25 cents in the gumball machine, but then they had ones at like toy stores and hardware stores and stuff, general stores, stationery stores back in the day, where you could get them for like a buck or $2 or something. And they were bigger and they would bounce higher, you know, bounce over your house, I think was the ad. Anyway, so his kid loved his Super Bowl and Lamar Hunt said, well, why don't we call it the Super Bowl? And obviously bowls coming from college football and super being one of those words that caught on like it was the name Stephen with a V. Just out of nowhere, here it is, and it's very popular. And so, like Extreme in the 90s, right? And then, remember when it got changed to the X game? I'm way off topic already, but, and ESPN said, well, you know, words go in and out of fashion, but letters are always cool, or something like that. So, yeah, so very interesting that I guess in the 1960s, 1970s, it was about everything being super. So, of course, wrestling being wrestling, it was pretty quickly that wrestling had its own Super Bowl or Super Bowls of wrestling. And actually, if you guys remember the original wrestler, the one that Vern Gagne financed and produced with Ed Asner as the wrestler, kind of playing Vern Gagne, one of the things, one of their goals is the idea of having this Super Bowl of wrestling where they unite all the titles. And interesting enough that most of the Super Bowls of wrestling that I'm going to talk about today have nothing to do with uniting all the titles. The famous one, we just passed the 40th anniversary, and if you guys like Florida wrestling, you've seen a lot of this, so I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it. But obviously the one in the Orange Bowl in Miami, with the main event being Superstar Graham defending the WWF title against Harley Race defending the NWA title. And it's interesting how many of these Super Bowls of wrestling turn out to be disappointments. Maybe half and half, or maybe, I don't even know, because a lot of them are little ones, as you'll see in just a minute. But the one in the Orange Bowl was considered a disappointment. It rained all day, which, you know, I mean, this time of year in Miami, Is that typical? I'm not sure if they could have predicted that or not. I know in a lot of places in Florida, it rains every day at the same time, especially on the coast. So, you know, maybe. But anyway, and then what we'll talk about in just a minute, the first, or what we think is the first Super Bowl of wrestling in 1972 was also considered a disappointment. But, you know, before we go into that, I just want to read a list of the cities because it's pretty funny. I mean, Miami, of course. Yeah, Miami is going to have a Super Bowl of wrestling. That makes sense. Cleveland, Ohio is apparently where the Super Bowl of wrestling started. And hat tip to the NWF, right? Like, how many of these big show concepts did they come up with? We traced the Parade of Champions back to Buffalo in, you know, like the 1930s. So that was insane. And then here is the Super Bowl of wrestling in Municipal Stadium in Cleveland. And that was considered a disappointment as well. And we'll get to that in just a minute. But so here's some other cities. I'll just go down the list of what I have. And obviously you guys know, you know, I'm doing research and pulling stuff from newspapers.com. But from the very moment I got on it, I was lamenting what wasn't on newspapers.com. And you guys know Al Getz has made an art of traveling to various places to pull these records. So you can't get everything, you know, online even today, and you can't ever be sure that you're getting everything in professional wrestling. Although, again, you know, like the Al Getzes of the world can estimate how complete a territory is. They can't tell you what show was or wasn't, you know, listed as the Super Bowl of wrestling. But 1973, shows in Memphis, El Paso, Bowling Green, Kentucky, Abilene, Texas, and Paducah, Kentucky, all labeled the Super Bowl of wrestling. In 74, I found shows from Nashville and Waterloo, Iowa. In 76, we have the big Texas, you know, North Texas show. In the late 70s, early 80s, it becomes a staple of, as you can imagine, Vern Gagne and the AWA in Chicago. And they end up running the Super Bowl of Wrestling annually in Chicago for a long time. And some of their big shows, like even in the 1980s, you know, even at the end, they give them other names ultimately, but came out of that same sort of concept of Super Bowl, you know, become Super Clash, right? At some point in Minneapolis and then later on cable. And then the big one in Miami in 1978, there's also one in Nashville that we'll talk about. And then I also found a card in 1981, I guess the dying days of Roy Shire's San Francisco, only this one is in Sacramento. And then, interestingly enough, one of the most famous Super Bowls of wrestling is mid-1990s, and it is a successful show. It's in Knoxville for Smoky Mountain, but you know what? It's like more or less the last big successful show in Smoky Mountain, and I think they come back twice in Knoxville, and, you know, like, attendance, they go from 5,000 to like 2,500 to like 1,000, and then they never get back in December before they close. So very interesting. You know, even with the NFL being pictured as, you know, very happy to sue you and trademark infringement lawsuits and things like that and protecting their brand, and now they have this trademark of the Super Bowl, you know, somehow pro wrestling outlaws that they are. I wonder how Jim Cornette would feel about being an outlaw. You know, they're still using, or we're still using, the concept of Super Bowl of wrestling. And I wonder if there's more, recent ones, if there's 21st century Super Bowls of wrestling out there that somebody's promoting, you know, under the radar. And just because it's so low key, it's not really a main event like AEW versus WWE Super Bowl of wrestling or whatever. You know, it's not attracting the attention enough to get sued. I don't know. I mean, if every radio station in America has to say the big game, honk, honk, quack, quack, like, you would think that the NFL's lawyers would find a wrestling promoter, but you know how wrestling is. Maybe they wouldn't. In any event, let's get to it. But first, a little ad. As you guys know, I have two published books on Amazon, The King of New Orleans, which is the biography of Sylvester Ritter, the Junkyard Dog, and then also The Paper Tigers, which was my first novel, the true story turned into historic fiction about the day that Ty Cobb climbed into the stands and nearly beat a crippled fan half to death. And then his team goes on strike and the Tigers field a scab team to go up against the world champion Philadelphia A's in a couple of games later in Philadelphia. But now, not so fast, Greg Klein, I have a third published novel on Amazon. By the time you guys listen to this, February 1st, available for sale for just $20, two plays by Greg Klein, Sunset Painting and The Sun. My first play, The Sun, actually 20 years ago in February of 2004, debuted on the Lower East Side or maybe East Village in New York City in a place called the KGB Bar, or was it the KGB Theater? I don't know. Maybe it was the Spy Theater and the KGB Bar. In any event, 20 years ago. And it's a newsroom drama. It's got some diversity. It's got one open ethnicity and one starring role that's for a 21-year-old African-American male. And then Sunset Painting, which is a very personal play. It's about taking care of my grandmother at the end of her life in Dobbs Ferry, New York. My grandmother was a child star. She actually was a star in Turkey as a little girl in nightclubs when her family was fleeing from Russia and the revolution. And she paid for their passage to America and then danced all over the country, all over the world, and ended up at Radio City Music Hall where she met my grandfather. And, you know, that's how I'm here today. And anyway, you know, as I said last time, there's that meme by Quentin Tarantino. Maybe he said it, maybe he didn't. You know how it is with memes. But make it so personal that you're uncomfortable to share. And that's what Sunset Painting is for me. It's bittersweet when I read it because it's about, you know, helping my grandmother toward death, but also helping her at the end of her life. And I was sort of wayward in my 20s, as you guys know, wanting to be a professional wrestler and working in a newspaper in Alabama, 1,000 miles from home, basically, and a society that was a little foreign to me, both wrestling-wise and Alabama-wise. And it was reconnecting with my grandmother and sort of, you know, falling into acting that changed my life and really gave me purpose and meaning in this world. And so, you know, we're actually also a little bit past the 20th anniversary of her death. So this was something that I felt like I could do to honor her and obviously honor my work. And I hope you guys will support it. Like I said, I've been between gigs and, you know, I mean, we're doing fine, you know, the life of an artist, but you can always need help. And there's always another bill to pay. And you guys know that. And so I would love for you guys to support me by checking out my work, whether it's my first set of plays, my novel, or my wrestling biography. And if you guys want an autographed copy, just let me know. I've got both PayPal and Cash App. And so you can send me, just for the price of the book, $20 for the plays, $25 for the novel, and I think $20 for the wrestling book, which I don't have in stock at the moment. But you can get them all on Amazon. And thank you guys for listening to that. Now we will get to the main events. And we will start with the first one. It was held at Municipal Stadium August 12th, 1972. And it was the National Wrestling Federation. And it was really, I don't know, I guess the joke was they drew more than the Cleveland Indians in 1972, but much less than they wanted. And it's this great big, you know, mutant oil filter stadium, right? And it could probably seat like 60, 70,000 people. And the best estimate that people have is 14,000. But I'm looking right here on Wikipedia and it says as high as 20,000 and as low as 5,000. And the sources cannot agree on a reliable number. And it was a weird show. They had like three rings set up. There was like a whole women's tournament and a tag team tournament and a little person's tournament. And a lot of these matches were going on simultaneously, you know, like it, as if it was an amateur match and you're got three, you know, mats going on. And to me, that's just too much going on. It's hard to process. It's hard to cheer. Like, what match are you watching? And then everybody's not watching the same match or cheering for the same thing. And it really messes up the working with the crowd part of it. In any event, so Sue Green and Lily Thomas won the women's tag team tournament over Tippi Wells and Peggy Patterson. I think Tippi Wells is a cool name. Sky Lolo and Little Brutus beat the Haiti Kid and Frenchie Lamont to win the little person tag team tournament. The NWF World Tag Team Champions, the Fargo Brothers, Don and Johnny, and Johnny, of course, is actually Greg Valentine, beat Wahoo McDaniel and Chief White Owl And then the NWA, that might be wrong. Well, no, it says National Wrestling Alliance. So the NWA World Tag Team Champions, Women's World Tag Team Champions, who knew? Toni Rose and Donna Cristinello defeated Sandy Parker and Debbie Johnson. The NWA World Women's Champion, the Fabulous Moolah, beat Vicki Williams. Moolah got a big payday on this show, by the way. She must have booked all the women. NWA U.S. Champion Bobo Brazil beat Killer Tim Brooks. Ernie Ladd and Abdullah the Butcher went to a double disqualification. And in the main event, the NWF North American Champion Johnny Powers defeated Johnny Valentine. It's a really nice show. Got a lot of women, a lot of little people, a lot of Valentines, a lot of Fargos, depending on what you name them. Not a bad show for the market, I think, but it just seemed like too much and too much going on and a disappointing gate. And it's funny, you know, that didn't stop this at all. But it is interesting how many of these shows are either disappointments or lead to sort of disappointing things. So that was 1972. That's all I found in 1972. And actually, it doesn't even come up on newspapers.com. I don't know if they don't have a good Cleveland source or they just didn't advertise that show. And maybe that was part of the problem as well, right? But it's not something that comes up, and there's no other Super Bowls of wrestling prior to 1973 that come up on newspapers.com. However, 1973 was a big year for the Super Bowl of wrestling. And we start at the Mid-South Coliseum Monday night, January 29th at 8 p.m. with a super 18-man battle royal. And then we have a battle of the world's largest wrestlers as the McGuire twins, 1,300 pounds, take on George Cannon and Sam Bass. That just made me laugh. I didn't think of Sam Bass as that big, but I guess they just threw him in for laughs. Then in the tag team match, Bobby Hart and Lorenzo Parenti go up against Charlie Cook and Burrhead Jones. And the bad guys are managed by Don Duffy. Then in another tag team match, the Kangaroos with George Cannon, and that's Al Costello and Don Kent, are up against Dennis Hall and Ben Justice. In a mixed match, Cowboy Lang and Miss Peggy Patterson and Don Duffy take on Johnny Reb, Miss Cora Combs, and Eric Von Bronner. And in the main event for the NWA Southern Championship, Tag Team Championship, Jerry Jarrett and Jackie Fargo champions against Jerry Lawler and Jim White with Sam Bass challengers. And there's a great picture of Jim White, a really interesting picture of Jerry Lawler. I'll put this up for you guys. And then Sam Bass, who's not really portly. I mean, he's okay. You know, he doesn't have a body, but he doesn't look any bigger than Jerry Lawler in this picture, to be honest. It's like three guys with no bodies in 1973, but what do you expect? Anyway, so that was the first one that I could find from 1973. So after they go to Cleveland, it ends up in Memphis. After that, El Paso, Texas. And let me pull this up. The Super Bowl of Wrestling, Monday, February 19th, 8:30 p.m. Dory Funk Jr., World Heavyweight Champion, and 9 great superstars. And that's kind of how they ran their ads, but there is an article here. Oh. Okay, World Heavyweight Champion Dory Funk Jr., Mexican Idol El Santo, and 6'6", 303-pound Ernie Ladd, former San Diego Charger guard, head promoter Gory Guerrero's Super Bowl of Wrestling next Monday night at the El Paso Coliseum. In last night's action at the Coliseum judging arena, Rapid Ricky Romero, intent on regaining his Rocky Mountain Heavyweight Championship, took a giant step in that direction by defeating gigantic Carl Von Krupp by coming from behind to win the second and third falls of a grueling match. The chain gang team of the Fargos used a length of chain to choke Lord Alfred Hayes of England into submission to win the third and deciding fall and remain unbeaten and retain their Western States Tag Team Championship. Flashy Les Thornton. That made me laugh ahead of time. Flashy Les Thornton downed Don Fargo to take the first fall, but then fell victim to the Fargos' combined efforts, losing to Don Fargo in 1707. The Fargos then used the chain to clinch the win 5 minutes later. All right, so that's the El Paso Super Bowl of Wrestling. I thought I had results for that one, but I don't see it. All right, after that, of all places, Bowling Green, Kentucky. And here we go. What is the Super Bowl of Wrestling? Why, it's what is expected to draw the largest crowd to Warren East Gymnasium tonight since the school played its basketball regular season finale against Christian County in late February that eventually resulted in East disqualification from tournament play by KHSAA. There's like some backstory there about that that we need to know, right? Why did Warren East get disqualified from the basketball playoffs? What did they do in the regular season finale against Christian County? All right, the Super Bowl of Wrestling begins at 8 p.m. tonight at the East Gym, sponsored by the Warren East Athletic Booster Club. So this was like a sold show. Hey, you know what we'll do? We'll sell you the Super Bowl of Wrestling. All right. The wrestling show, which will feature five matches, has been promoted by Phil Golden, with Don Pruitt serving as the matchmaker. In the main event, billed as a world tag team title match, Kurt and Carl Von Brauner, along with manager Gentleman Saul Weingroff, will go up against Dale Mann with Mike Pappas. Another tag team match. Pits Sweet Daddy Watts, who measures only 5'5" in height, but tips the scales at 402 pounds against Giant Frazier, who stands just over 7 feet tall and weighs 455 pounds. And in still another tag team match, Corsica Joe and the Mass Spoiler take on Joe Ball and Billy Helm. In a midget match, 81-pound Little Tojo squares off against 90-pound Christopher Columbus. And in a girls' tag team match, Marie Vignon and Sarah McKay go up against Candy Kane and Sherry Lee. In addition to the five matches on the card, a number of old-timers in the wrestling world will also be on hand, including Cecil Blacksmith Pedigo, former middleweight champion of the world, Charlie Strongman Vaden, former heavyweight, Edgar Speedy Gibbons, former referee and wrestler, Jack Welsh, former wrestler and promoter, Wee Willie Davis, who measures 6'9 and weighs 350 pounds, Buck Moore, former heavyweight wrestler. Also appearing as a special guest referee will be Western Athletic Director Johnny Oldham. Ringside tickets have been priced at $350 apiece, while general admission is $250 for adults and $150 for children under 12. So it's interesting that those ads are actually pretty cool, you know, as far as like posting ads, and I'll post those in various places. I'll try to post all of this in various places. And I had meant to get some of my stuff together for, you know, in the Twitter hashtag sort of way. But yeah, nice try. Anyway, so Kentucky must have had some success with the Super Bowl of Wrestling, because later in the year on Thanksgiving night, November 22nd, oh, by the way, that previous one was, I think, March 22nd. So here they are back 8 months later, this time in Paducah at the Paducah Sports Arena. Thanksgiving night, November 22nd, Super Bowl of Wrestling, all bouts, main events, parade of champions. Wow, they got them both in this time. Starts off with Jim Pride, the graduate, against Paducah's own Buddy Hack, followed by Whipper Watson Jr., the world junior heavyweight champion, against handsome Ricky Hamilton, with his beautiful slave girl, and then mixed match with Little Atlas and Raquel Dubois against Margie Martin and Cecil Strong. There's like this, I don't know, the women and the little people mixing is an interesting concept that seems to be very popular in the early 1970s. And then the tag team match is Leapin' Lanny and Tom Shaft, the leading MAC contenders versus the original Mighty Yankees. And then in the main event, the World Heavyweight Champion, the man, Dale Mann. Oh no, the World Heavyweight Championship match. The challenger, the man, Dale Mann, against Angelo Poffo, champion, with manager Sidney Bacchibelli? I don't know. Kentucky wrestling is a strange and wonderful place. And then we go back to Texas and Abilene, Texas for this one. And this one is in July. I believe it's July 3rd. And here we go. Following Monday's fine crowd and wrestling show, Don Slatton will bring the grapplers back to San Angelo Coliseum next Tuesday for what he describes as the Super Bowl of Wrestling. The Abilene promoter says there will be a bevy of big names on hand. Monday night, Dory Funk Jr. took another big step back toward the heavyweight title he held for over 4 years before losing it about a month ago to Mad Dog Harley Race.
Funk won a bitter battle from tough Ciclone Negro, taking the decision on a disqualification after the two had battled to a 1-1 deadlock. Negro had the former champ pinned in the third and deciding fall, but had his foot braced on the lower rope. Referee Dave Marine caught him and gave the decision to Funk. In the co-main event, the popular Polish duo of Ivan Putski and Moose Morawski won a 13-7 decision over Hank James and Buck Robley. All right, let's see. Do they have any more information? Yeah, here is more of an ad. Six matches, including the appearance of former heavyweight champion Dory Funk Jr. Highlight the wrestling card set this week, Friday, at the Taylor County Coliseum. This is a different one. Holy moly. There's so many of these Texas Super Bowls of Wrestling, and I don't know that I have a date on this one. Okay, at the Taylor County Coliseum is what has been billed as the Super Bowl of Wrestling. Funk Jr. is scheduled to battle King Curtis Iakea, a Hawaiian wrestler, in the main event. Another big match finds Polish giant Ivan Putski going against John Fargo. Putski is also slated to perform feats of arm strength between matches. Terry Funk will meet Ciclone Negro in another tough match. Ricky Romero is said to take to the ring with Carl Von Krupp. The fifth match will have Mr. Wrestling and Les Thornton teaming against Saruta and Nick Kozak. Hank James versus Don Fargo rounds out the card. Seats are still available at the Coliseum box office. All right, I was checking my notes, and I do believe that is the same card. That is, Taylor County is in Abilene. And unless they had two Super Bowls of Wrestling in Abilene that year, I think we're good to go. But, you know, the lawman Don Slatton, you can't put anything by him, obviously. So here we go, 1974, and again, some interesting stuff, this time in Nashville, and this is September 18th, 1974, for Nick Gulas, two belts, an explosive tag, and five other matches comprise tonight's Super Bowl spectacular wrestling card at Municipal Auditorium. The Sheik and Jackie Fargo will clash for the NWA heavyweight title in a grudge match that has no time limit and no disqualification. Manager Eddie Kreshman will accompany the Sheik. Jerry Lawler will risk his NWA Southern Heavyweight belt against Bobo Brazil. Tojo Yamamoto will team with George Gulas in the explosive tag against Don Kent and Chris Gallagher, who will be accompanied by manager Jim Kent. In this type of match, falls count wherever they are made. Sir Clements will engage Dennis Hall in a grudge bare knuckles battle, while another grudge bout will find Tommy Marlin meeting Bobby D. In other matches, Charlie Fulton and Bobby Main face Johnny and Ricky Fields. All-time great Lou Thesz meets Don Green, and the Canadian star Steve Kovac tests Duke Myers. The first match will begin at 8:30, and advance tickets are available at Shire's Jewelry Store, 627 Church Street. However, not to be outdone, Waterloo, Iowa, of all places, had a Super Bowl of Wrestling that year. And let's see if I can pick it up. Here it is. So this was April 3rd, 1974. The McElroy Auditorium. Waterloo Super Bowl of Wrestling. Starts off with an opening tag team of Sonny Myers and Ronnie Etchison, trainer of the Stars, versus Bob Orton and Percy Pringle. Then we get Lord Al Hayes and Bob Brown versus Mike George and Omar Atlas. Special added attraction, Pat O'Connor versus Reggie Parks. The semifinal, Carl Von Steiger versus Andre the Giant. And in main event number two, a 12-man battle royal, $5,000 purse to the winner. And in main event number one, Chris Taylor versus Nature Boy Roger Kirby. That is Iowa's Super Bowl of Wrestling. Fairly interesting as well. We will skip over 1976 for the moment and get to that at the end when we talk about Texas. But we will look at a little bit of AWA. So here, there's a great column. Let's see. It's 1977, the Chicago Tribune. It says that, I don't know if this is, I think this is the name of the column. His name is David Condon. And then I think the column name is In the Wake of the News, which is a great name in terms of, I guess, you're following the news with a column. Camelot 2, That's what we originally planned to call the great event because it features that shiny knight of sportsdom and sweatsdom, Sir Vern Gagne himself. That's Vern Gagne, former football American at Minnesota. Now the world's all-American boy. Sir Vern, more gallant than Galahad, more noble than Lancelot. Camelot, too, what a name that would have been for a world championship wrestling match, continued Bob Luce, the wide-eyed hero who became a mat promoter after reportedly turning an opportunity down to become commissioner of the Big Ten and president of the International Olympic Committee. Well, at the very least, he's a world-class worker, right? However, I came up with something better for our show in the amphitheater on December 3rd. Champion Nick Bockwinkel versus challenger Vern Gagne. It will be Wrestling Super Bowl III. That's it, sports fans. Vern Gagne, the old favorite, who originally won the World Heavyweight Championship from Hercules, Abe Lincoln, Frank Gotch, Mayor Bilandic, or whatever, is making a comeback. It's not really a comeback, because in the hearts of fans, I've never truly been away since said Gagne, who drops around my office regularly to exchange comic books. And now let's listen to me laugh for about 20 seconds. But records show that in my almost native St. Paul, Minnesota, on November 7th, 1975, I lost the championship to that dastardly Bockwinkel. It was the worst decision in Minnesota sports history if you forget the one that allowed Cal Griffith to move his baseball team there. Now I desire to regain the championship right in my Minnesota backyard, where I was humiliated by that dastardly Bockwinkel. But then I thought to myself, Chicago's amphitheater is the cradle of championship wrestling. Verily, Sir Vern speaketh the truth, said promoter Luce. I wonder if he's just making up these quotes. I wonder if this is like Pro Wrestling Illustrated After Magazine style, where they're just making up stuff. I am the King Arthur of wrestling. Gagne is my shining knight, and the amphitheater is the seat of my court. I don't know if I can keep reading this. This is so over the top. Fans identify the amphitheater and my livestock with wrestling as certainly as Camelot is identified with... Oh, good lord, I can't even read that sentence. Caer Leon upon Usk in Monmouthshire, with Queen's Camel in Somerset, or with Camelford. So it is by popular demand that King Arthur Luce, has brought the Sir Vern Nick Bockwinkel match to Chicago. True to Camelot tradition, Gagne versus Bockwinkel is a David and Goliath struggle. I'm not sure who the David is. Is Vern Gagne the David? Psst, David and Goliath are the Bible, Gagne whispered to Luce. You're thinking of Daniel and the Detroit Lions. That's the Bible, corrected Luce. Who's promoting this Wrestling Super Bowl III anyhow? You're just the star. Some star, shouted Gagne. You get all the good lines. I'm the one who draws the fans. And I wish to say that the Chicago fans are the greatest in the world, continued Gagne. They are true blue, a credit to our fine sport. What we emphasize, declared Luce, is that this may be the last time that wrestling fans anywhere will see Gagne and his fearsome sleeper hold. God, we should be so lucky. The sleeper hold that subdued Goliath, Lincoln, Lundus, and all the great grapplers I have encountered in my storied career, interposed Gagne. Luce went on. If Gagne regains the title and the $1 million jeweled belt with the Coors beer buckle, he plans to retire to his commune in Minnesota and enjoy the retirement he so richly deserves. I will beat Bockwinkel fair and square, said Gagne, and then retire, unless Muhammad Ali wants to meet me winner take all. Promoter Luce's eyes sparkled as they do on TV when he sells you of the glories of Dick the Bruiser and the hickory smoked ribs at Miller's Pub, which sponsors Luce's weekly gore show. Luce beamed. He showed tears of joy and said, Sir Vern Gagne versus Muhammad Ali? That's the one we'll call Camelot too. Now, if you excuse me, I must keep an appointment with a psychiatrist. I'm driving crazy. Yeah, that is a little over the top, right? But, okay, here is the actual card. Matches begin promptly at 8 p.m., so please show up. Spike Huber versus El Bracero. El Bracero. Second event, Chris Markoff versus Yukon Moose Cholak. Third event, Blackjack Lanza versus Rufus Jones. Fourth event, Bobby Duncan versus Steve Regal. Fifth event, six-man tag match featuring Wilbur Snyder, Greg Gagne, and Jim Brunzel versus Jimmy Valiant, John Valiant, and Roger Kirby. Sixth event, Ray Stevens versus Ivan Koloff. The main event, number one, Dick the Bruiser versus the Crusher. Oh, Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher. God, made my heart pump for a minute there. Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher versus Angelo Mosca and the Super. I don't know if that's Superstar, Super Destroyer, or just Mr. Bookman from Good Times. Main event number two, Vern Gagne versus Nick Bockwinkel. Tickets for the Super Bowl may be purchased in advance at all Ticketron outlets in Chicago and suburbs and at the amphitheater box office during the day from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Price of tickets, all seats reserved, ringside $10, main floor and mezzanine $8, and balcony $5.50. Doors to the Wrestling Super Bowl will open at 6 p.m. So that is one of the big AWA shows. Apparently they started that in 75 and they're still going strong in 1980 when, guess what? Are you excited? Guess who's back? It's not Slim Shady, unfortunately. Although he was on TV the other day for the football. All right, so again, David Condon with nary a bruise, Galahad Gagne is champion again. And this, I guess, is a recap of the most recent Super Bowl with a crowd of 10,321 in Comiskey Park as Gagne finally, 3 years after the previous, wins the title back from Bockwinkel. Vern Gagne, whose strength is the strength of 10 because his heart is pure, awoke Saturday morning as the heavyweight champion once again of the whole wide world of professional wrestling. The aching sportsman awoke with nary a bruise and scarcely an ache. Oh, the aging sportsman awoke. So easy was Friday night's conquest of wicked Nick Bockwinkel. No one could find Bockwinkel or his manager, Bad Bobby Heenan, to ask how the deposed title holder awakened Saturday. I couldn't care less how Bockwinkel felt when he got out of bed today, the jubilant Gagne said after receiving a telephone call from Governor Thompson at mid-morning Saturday. David Condon's got some sources. He is in the room when the governor calls Vern Gagne. It'd be a good guess, though, that Bockwinkel was well rested when he awakened. After all, he was slumbering on the floor for 15 minutes after I finished him off with my trusty old sleeper hold. I've never felt more personal satisfaction in all my years of wrestling, continued Galahad Gagne. Since he won the championship from me in 1975, Bockwinkel has been bad-mouthing everything, everywhere, and his arrogance and foul tactics certainly have brought no credit to our sport. The crowd of 10,321 in Comiskey Park cheered like everything when Bockwinkel, who had successfully defended against four previous challenges by Gagne, fell victim to Gagne's awesome sleeper. The White Sox scoreboard exploded and rockets illuminated the sky to notify residents of Bridgeport that virtue had triumphed. Can you imagine? I know if you live near the stadium, you're probably used to like fireworks or noise or whatever, but you know, the announcer sort of echoing in the cavernous. But anyway, I hope this means that Vern will forget about retirement, said Bob Luce, promoter of Friday's Wrestling Super Bowl VI. There never has been a grappler to equal Vern Gagne. Why, Gags was crying like a baby as he caressed the championship belt after his conquest. The championship contest, televised for future showing, was scheduled for one fall 60-minute time limit. The grappling, though, lasted only for 22 minutes and 6 seconds, and it was Gagne almost all the way. Because, you know, why would Vern sell it all for the guy who was putting him over at the end of the match? 5 times, the determined Gagne pitched Bockwinkel from the ring onto the Comiskey Park infield. On one such occasion, Bockwinkel stood on the turf and tried to pull Gagne from the ring. Vern suffered a painful injury when Bockwinkel spread-eagled him around a ring post. Gagne, though hurt, was so infuriated by Bockwinkel's unfair tricks that he brought the match to a hasty conclusion. Vern was seconded by his son Greg, known as Gagne the Lesser. Oh, good lord. All right, I got to stop and laugh for a minute at David Condon, who gets right to the heart of the matter with the AWA in the 1980s. I'm looking at you, Rambo Greg Gagne. All right. Bockwinkel was seconded by Heenan, who earlier had been humiliated wrestling Greg. In that match, Greg hurled his foe from the ring at 11:03, and the cowardly Heenan refused to return. Prior to the championship match, Bockwinkel asked the referee to outlaw Gagne's sleeper hold because he claimed Gagne's sleeper hold isn't a hold, it's a choke. The referee laughed in Bockwinkel's face when Wicked Nick suggested Gagne employed foul tactics. Bockwinkel then realized that his only chance of emerging triumphant was to catch the challenger by surprise. Bockwinkel surged across the ring before the starting bell and caught Gagne from behind while Vern was still acknowledging a pause. From the ambush, Bockwinkel had Gagne's shoulders pinned to the mat in the first 5 seconds. Gagne broke the hold just as the referee's hand was to slap the canvas for the third and final time. Gagne regained his feet and assaulted Nick with a Tokyo coffin squeeze. I've never heard of that. Vern Gagne fans, jump in. What is the Tokyo coffin squeeze? Sounds like a bear hug, right? Bockwinkel clearly was in trouble when Gagne pitched him from the ring into the lap of Heenan. Bockwinkel begged Heenan to throw in the towel. Get back in the ring or I'll throw you back myself, roared Heenan, who is braver as a second than as a wrestler. Bockwinkel returned, and to his credit, did try valiantly against the fury that had been pent up in Gagne for almost 5 years. Though Bockwinkel may be a villainous wrestler, Nick is not a coward when the chips are down. He accepted punishment from Gagne like a man. I'm going to laugh again. But when Vern finally slipped on the sleeper, that's all she wrote, boys. Fans mobbed Gagne. Few noticed that Heenan was desperately trying to revive Bockwinkel. 15 minutes later, Bockwinkel was on his feet, but wobbly. Both he and Heenan remained in the ring protesting that Gagne had choked Wicked Nick. I hate poor losers, shouted Mad Dog Vachon, as he chased both Bockwinkel and Heenan into the first base dugout. So it sounds like, I'm no expert on this, but it sounds like for 5 years in a row at the Super Bowl of Wrestling for the AWA, it was Vern Gagne chasing Nick Bockwinkel, and then he finally gets it back in 1980 and excitement, right? There must have been some excitement after that, right? All right. So, also, 1980. Oh, I left this one out. Grunting and groaning at the palace. This is... The Super Bowl of Wrestling will take place Saturday at 8:30 p.m. at the Cow Palace with 18 eager contenders vying for $30,000 in prize money. The Battle Royal with two referees and no rules will feature such grunter groaners as Ray Stevens, Chief Maivia, Ernie Ladd, Ron Starr, Harley Race, Terry and Dory Funk, Bruiser Brody, Chavo Guerrero, Assassin, The Masked Intern, George Wells, Bruiser Bob Sweetan, Gene Kaniski, The Sheik, Don Leo Jonathan, Dusty Rhodes, Ed Wiskowski, and 300-pound T. John Thibodeau, which is not how they spelled it at all. The free-for-all, anything goes, encounter will be followed by a world heavyweight title match between challenger Ray Stevens and champion Harley Race. That sounds like a really good match. And then a U.S. title match between challenger Bruiser Bob Sweetan and champion George Wells. That sounds like a really bad match. All right, so that is the 1980 Cow Palace Super Bowl of Wrestling. But I also have, in Sacramento, 1981, January 22nd, 1981, Super Bowl of Wrestling, 50,000, 18-man Battle Royal, Cow Palace. Oh, so maybe this is at the Cow Palace. It's just advertised in the Sacramento paper. Gotcha. Okay, so back there the next year for the Super Bowl of Wrestling, the annual Battle Royal. I don't know if they always, obviously they didn't always call it that, but I wonder if, you know, did they start earlier in the 70s and I'm just not getting those ads? And then this is, you know, getting towards the end, obviously in 1981, not quite there yet. So for this one, we've got Dory and Terry Funk against, just says Alex Smirnoff. Oh, I see. They're not listing matches. Okay, here's who's on the card. 625-pound John Thibodeau. They spelled it differently this year. Closer. Ray Stevens, Pat Patterson, Peter Maivia, Ernie Ladd, Dory and Terry, World Tag Team Champions, Funk, and Alex Smirnoff. Seven top other wrestlers, plus two world titles at stake and five other matches, headlined by Harley Race, the world champion, and Dusty Rhodes, the U.S. champion. But it doesn't say who they're against. All right, that is 1981. Let me just run through my file real quick to see if I'm missing any of these. And then as we talked about the big Super Bowl of Wrestling in Miami, which is held in 1978 on January 25th in the Orange Bowl. And here are the results of that Rocky Johnson beat Killer Carl Cox by DQ. Ivan Putski beat Ox Baker. Joyce Grable won an 8-woman battle royal. Chava Guerrero beat Tank Patton. Bobby Duncan beat Don Serrano. Keith Franks, a.k.a. Adrian Adonis, beat John Ruffin. Mike Graham and Steve Kern beat the Valiant Brothers, Jimmy and Johnny, to win the Florida U.S. Tag Team Championship. Pedro Morales beat Lars Anderson. The Briscoes beat Koloff and Saito. Dusty Rhodes beat Ken Patera. And Funk and Graham, Graham and Race, went to a 60-minute time limit during a three-fall match. Gorilla Monsoon and Don Curtis were the special referees. Graham beat Race by submission in the first fall. Race won the second at the 46-minute mark with his suplex. And the third fall was a bloody battle with Race having Superstar and a sleeper at the last minute. As Don Curtis was counting, the time limit ran out and the match was declared a draw. I'm surprised the WWF went for that. WWF went for that. But it was a heel. Superstar Graham, it was out of market. I don't know how much publicity this would have gotten in their main markets, although certainly there would have been some in New York if they had Florida on TV at that time on the Hispanic network. But I'm not 100% sure when that starts and when that ends and so on and so forth. In any event, that is the big show there. And again, because of the rain, it says that it was a bit of a disappointment. It rained all day, probably hurt all the walk up. It ended up being about 12,000 fans. And then I guess the Smoky Mountain one is in Knoxville. It is August 4th, 1995. Drew about 5,000 fans to the Civic Coliseum. Starts with Brian Road Dogg Armstrong beating D'Lo Brown. The Headbangers, my boy Murray's enemies, Mosh and Thrasher, defeated Chris Michaels and Flash Flanagan. In the USWA tag team title match, PG-13 of JC Ice and Wolfie D with Randy Hales beat Curtis Thompson and Jackie Fulton. The Punisher beat Bob Armstrong. In the MTW heavyweight title match, Al Snow beat Marty Jannetty for the title. And then NWA World Heavyweight title match, Dan Severn beat Bobby Blaze. In a tag team match, the Militia of Gordy and Rich beat Boo Bradley and the Mongolian Stomper. The USWA heavyweight title match, Brad Armstrong beat Billy Jack Haynes to win the title. In a singles match, The Undertaker beat Unabom. Undertaker had Paul Bearer and Unabom had Al Snow on his way to becoming Glenn Jacobs and Dr. Isaac Yankum, and then the mayor of Knox County, which is the weirdest transition ever. And then in the Smoky Mountain tag team title match, the Heavenly Bodies beat the Thugs, White Boy and Smothers, for the title. And then in the main event, WWF Intercontinental title match, Shawn Michaels beat hometown hero Buddy Landell with Jim Cornette in 14 minutes. Sounded like it was a really good match, really good crowd. Obviously, they built it up. You know, Buddy Landell in his sort of, in his 1996 Jake Roberts, I'm reformed, you know, John 316 mode, was a good babyface. You know, just, but it wasn't so pretentious. It was really, everybody knew that Buddy had screwed up many, many times. But now Buddy was clean and sober for a while, and he was wrestling as a babyface in that market. And so it was really pushed hard as this is Buddy's shot at redemption. And obviously he doesn't win, but, you know, in essence, I think that he, you know, he wins for losing, but I don't know. You know, your lead baby faces at this point are Brad Armstrong, Buddy Landell, and, you know, the Thugs, White Boy and some others. And, you know, Brad and Buddy, it's not that you couldn't rise up from a lower position in the world in wrestling, because that's the history of wrestling, right? But, you know, they had been on TV a lot, getting beat in mid-card roles. Brad had had like a million different roles in WCW by this point, Bradstreet and Arachnaman. And, you know, not that everybody knows that, but just hadn't gotten a push in a long, long time. And then Buddy, and even, you know, White Boy and Tracy are great, you know, as the Thugs. That, I think that was a great tag team. It was a great innovation. You know, having both those guys team up after fighting for so long is a great way to keep sort of the heat going in a way. And it had Smoky Mountain lasted, you could have broken them up again and then feuded them again either way. But, you know, it is, I mean, your top baby faces are lacking something in that mix, and maybe that's part of it. But it was a great buildup, and obviously it did pay off for that show. I just don't know, you know, it seems like the history of Smoky Mountain is them building up for big shows, and then there's an inevitable letdown, and, you know, you really needed the business to be at the high end most or all of the time to be successful at this point. And when the financial backer is gone, Smoky Mountain just couldn't keep going. I don't think it was the, you know, the end of the line booking so much. But anyway, just something to note. I don't get into a lot of 90s stuff except my own stuff. And even then, we haven't done that in a long, long time. So that is the Smoky Mountain Super Bowl of wrestling. And now we will get to the main event, which is back in 1976, Texas Stadium. And we will start with the championship wrestling program, one of those neat little havesy programs. This is from the Northside Coliseum, Monday, May 17th, 1976. It's got a picture of Andre the Giant with, I think, Dick Cavett. He's sitting at a desk. It looks like a talk show. Andre's immense compared to the desk and Dick Cavett. And it says, Texas Stadium, El Santo, Giant, Midgets, on stadium card. The okay has been given since printing pages 2 and 3, and now it can be told. At least, most of it can be told. Meaning only the biggest wrestling card in the history of the world. This is, of course, the forthcoming card at Texas Stadium. Plan now on being there. A world title match between U.S. champion Fritz Von Erich and Terry Funk tops the program. And also on the card, billed as the Super Bowl of Wrestling, will be Andre the Giant, the legendary masked El Santo. Exciting star midgets and grapplers, a healthy and healed and husky Rick Martel, and on, more news, and a definite date next Monday. All right. Now, the funny thing is, it says since page 2 and 3 were printed, but on page 2 is a lot about this. Tokyo, New York, Mexico City, and the rest of the world can forget about promoting the most wanted world title match in history. They may forget about promoting that match, but a lot of big-time promoters are already making their plans to see this rematch between champion Terry Funk and American heavyweight titleist Fritz Von Erich. All anyone can do is plan on being ready for one of the greatest grappling cards ever. It will be at big and beautiful Texas Stadium. And soon! Exclamation point. The only match signed is the world title bout, but the list of supporting matches, all of which would be main events anywhere, is staggering. Never before, exclamation point. Never before has such a card been contemplated, exclamation point. It will truly be the Super Bowl of Wrestling, quotes and exclamation points. For one thing, one of the grapplers in a prelim will be rebounding Ricky Martel, the sensational young man who was zooming to the very tip-top until a brutal attack by Stan Hansen got him out of action. But Martel has mended and wants to show Texas fans he is again ready to show them all his action. But that is just a sample of the action you will see on this super stadium card, a promotion made possible because Dallas and Fort Worth have joined in that promotion. More news weekly as it develops. All right, so that is the Northside Coliseum. Do I have enough time to read you that card real quick? Where are we? Yeah, we got a few minutes. All right, I'm going to go there. Just this is the weekly card. So it starts off with Paul Pershman against Don Fargo, and Pershman wins with a knee drop. Somebody wrote this in. Ken Mantell and Francisco Flores go to a 15-minute draw. In the third event, Jose Lothario beats Don Wade with the stomach claw in 9:42. Surprise, somebody else is using the claw. In a special event, Lord Alfred Hayes beats Johnny Eagle with the Tower of London in 10:27. In the semifinal, 2 out of 3 falls, Killer Brooks and Chief Maivia. Brooks wins the first fall with a body slam in 5 minutes. Maivia wins the second fall in another 5 minutes. Then in the third fall, Brooks throws Maivia over the top rope in 10 minutes. Maivia wins by DQ. And in the main event, Mongolian Stomper, who for some reason is listed from, wait for it, Hong Kong, wrestles Rocky Johnson, who got the win in 14 minutes with a shoulder pin. All right. Now we move on. June 1st, 1976. Big Time Wrestling Sportatorium, Cadets and Industrial Dallas. 35 cents for the program. Now, this is to advertise. This is sold that week at the Sportatorium show, which is on a Tuesday night. The big show is on, I guess, Friday night at the Sportatorium. We'll get to that in just a minute. Saturday night at the Sportatorium. So here's what it says. The big one, exclamation point. Texas Stadium, exclamation point. Saturday night, exclamation point. World title, exclamation point. Fritz versus champion Terry Funk, exclamation point. Actually, the match came first. A rematch, that is. And then the idea of the promotion at Texas Stadium makes you think of Jim Cornette, right? This was a match looking for a stadium, not a stadium looking for a match. That rematch is for the world title, with Fritz Von Erich, in a sense, seeking his third straight win over the young, newly crowned champion, Terry Funk of Amarillo. Fritz smashed Terry late last year when he put him away with the famed Iron Claw hold and ruined Terry's bid to win the American Heavyweight Championship. But less than a month later, Terry subbed for his injured brother, Dory, himself holder of the world crown over a four-year span, and Terry upended champion Jack Briscoe in Miami. Exclamation point. Briscoe had won the crown in Houston by defeating Harley Race, who only 2 months earlier beat Dory. Exclamation point. Terry did not want to defend his belt against Fritz, or so it outwardly appeared. Dory stepped in and said, in so many words, that if Fritz couldn't beat an ex-champ, he shouldn't challenge the current champ. Fritz did not have to beat Dory or even acknowledge his statement. But Fritz did agree to meet Dory, and did then beat him in Dallas. Then came the bout against Terry, and at the conclusion, Fritz's hand was raised in victory. But confusion reigned because of interference, and the decision, as everyone knows, was reversed. Fritz tough! Exclamation point. While Fritz is a great favorite here, it was not just hometown partisanship that clearly showed he was a better man in the ring against Terry, and Fritz has trained himself to a peak to be the better man this Saturday. Two referees! Exclamation point. No DQs! Exclamation point. And in this championship rematch, two referees will be there. One will be in the ring and the other on the floor, in this case, of the plush AstroTurf of Texas Stadium. I love how they sell AstroTurf in the 1970s. It's just like soft carpet. And no disqualification will be called, which, in effect, gives the edge to the more determined and rougher man! Exclamation point. Hey, who do you guys think that is? Fritz feels as though this is his big chance for the title that he has sought, the only one that has eluded him. Seeing Fritz at his best is well worth this admission, and many fans feel he will wear that championship belt out of the ring. Terry is the champ, and Texas can be proud that a second Texan now holds the world crown. But many feel that the third Texan to hold the global championship will be Fritz Von Erich this Saturday night at Texas Stadium. All right. Now, it's interesting, the inside page, unlike like the Houston programs where the outside, you know, the front would advertise the next week's matches, but the inside would be all about this week's matches. This one is all about this Saturday. So here's what it says. Andre back in Battle Royal! Exclamation point. Moondog Martel in action! Exclamation point. Andre in handicap versus both manager J.J. Dillon and the Mongolian Stomper. Saturday night. Stomper and Maivia in... Stomper and Maivia in semifinal. Star 10-man field in gang war. Midget gals on the stadium program. I didn't even know we had those. Healthy Martel returns! Exclamation point. Moondog debuts! Exclamation point. Eight big matches! Exclamation point. Save money! 2 exclamation points. Buy your tickets early. And then there's a picture of Ricky Martel, who is, I mean, he must be like 21, 22 at this stage. He's everything you would expect Ricky Martel to be at that age. All right. The so-called supporting bouts would make a whole card of main events at Texas Stadium Saturday night. You've heard about the world title bout, Andre the Giant, El Santo, Midget Gals, etc. But any fan of handsome young Ricky Martel might rate the return of Ricky as a big, big benefit of the special stadium card. Ricky is very popular, of course, but his return signifies that he is again healthy and handsome, instead of just handsome, as was the case after Stan Hansen trapped him from behind. So Ricky will be there. So will Rocky. Yes, Rocky Johnson has a big match. So does Rez Bastien. So does Chief Maivia, Francisco Flores, Don Fargo, and Moon Dog Main! Exclamation point. This is the bombshell that really has the rest of the mat world talking. Moondog is an Arkansas native, rough as they come, and he has made his mark big in mat circles. In fact, many rate him as rougher than the Mongolian Stomper, which gives you a clue. Moondog, all rugged and bearded, 255 pounds of him, will be seen first in the Texas Stadium ring this Saturday night. A mat card like this, a joint promotion of Dallas and Fort Worth, will not come along again, probably in our lifetime. There is a ticket price for everyone from $2 up. Every seat is good. Every seat is covered, so a rainout is impossible. I am looking at you, Miami. All right, so here's, I think, the lineup. All right, Uncle Phil. I don't know who Uncle Phil is. Uncle Phil says, it's hard to wait another 4 days for that big championship card at Texas Stadium. But, like it said last week, as big a championship match as that is, it is just a part of a bigger card. Seeing Andre the Giant get his hands, man, what huge hands, on J.J. Dillon would be well worth the price of admission. And I am a big fan of Ricky Martel as anyone, and we haven't seen Ricky in several months. What a promising career that young man has in front of him, and already has so many big wins in his pocket. And something new has been added by signing Moondog Main. I've heard a lot about him. He'll be there. And the cutest little gal stars in the ring in Darlin Dagmar and Diamond Lil. Okay, upon further review, I guess I did know that. I did know of them. American fans are envious of El Santo, as he should be a prime favorite of every Matt fan in the world, not just of those of Spanish ancestry. And if Al Hayes thinks he can take care of El Santo easily, then Hayes is not as smart as he thinks he is. Rocky Johnson has a big match on the card. So does Rez Bastien. So does Chief Maivia. And so does Terry Funk. Terry couldn't beat Fritz for the American title. And he actually lost to Fritz last time. And then had the decision reversed. Fritz would have already been the champion. Had the decision not been reversed, Fritz would have already been the champion. Something I think is going to happen next Saturday night at big and beautiful Texas Stadium.
And what happened at big and beautiful Texas Stadium, you might ask? Well, here we go. Funk retains Matt title June 5th, 1976. Terry Funk retained his World Heavyweight Wrestling Championship Saturday night when his title bout with Fritz Von Erich resulted in a double disqualification at Texas Stadium. Both wrestlers were counted out when Von Erich went after Funk outside the ring in an attempt to get the champ back inside the ropes. In other matches on the card, billed as the Super Bowl of Wrestling, Chief Maivia beat Don Fargo. Rez Bastien drew with Ricky Martel. Rocky Johnson beat Larry Sharp. Andre the Giant beat the Mongolian Stomper and J.J. Dillon. Diamond Lil beat Darlin Dagmar. And El Santo teamed with Jose Lothario to defeat Killer Brooks and Paul Pershman. That does sound like a good card, doesn't it? I mean, obviously, it's on some level like a one-match card. But then, you know, you want Andre. You want to see Andre. Nice loaded attraction. And Rocky Johnson is a big star in Texas at this point. Rick Martel is a young, you know, for the girls type of star. Bringing him back. Good with draw with Rez Bastien. And I think it lives up to the hype as a Super Bowl of Wrestling. Because, obviously, in 1976, Fritz Von Erich and Terry Funk is a big time main event, and a lot of people probably thought that Fritz was going to win the title. They will keep the chase going, though, on and on and on through many different champions until, as you guys know, they pass it down to Fritz's sons. I have not seen the Iron Claw yet, which is why I haven't come at you guys with a review. I think that I will get it, or I'll get to watch it as part of the SAG Awards, you know, looking at a mailer or doing a download. So I just haven't paid too much attention, although some of the historical inaccuracies kind of make me bonkers. But, you know, I get it. I'm the only one, or I'm one of the few, and everybody else can enjoy it for what it is. So good on you. I will at some point watch it, though, and give you my 2 cents for whatever that's worth. But in this case, we have been talking about the Super Bowl of Wrestling, its origins in 1972, and tracing it all the way to 1995. Pretty amazing, 20 plus years of the Super Bowl of Wrestling in a lot of different places, as we talked about. Not just the big cities like Cleveland or Nashville or Miami or
you know, Memphis or El Paso, Chicago, Dallas, but also some pretty small places too, right? I mean, Bowling Green, Kentucky, in a high school gym, Warren East High School, Paducah, Kentucky, Abilene, Texas. So it was sort of one of those things that could suit whatever, I guess, the promoter's mindset was. You could use it as a sold show. You could use it as a big stadium show. You could use it as a high school gym show. And that is, as far as we know, the history of the Super Bowl of Wrestling. But like all of this with wrestling, more information will come out. Hopefully, I will be there to discover it. If not me, then some of these other great wrestling historians we have. We are in a golden era of wrestling historians. And I say that not even thinking about myself, but just thinking about, you know, Al and Kurt and all the people that are doing biographies now, like Kenny and you know, John Cosper and people like that. Just a really good time to be a wrestling fan of the territory era. It's long gone, but it lingers on Peacock. It lingers in our memories, and it lingers on podcasts like these. I am Greg Klein. This is Greg Klein's Old School Wrestling Talk. I'm glad you guys are listening. Thank you guys for listening. And we will talk again at the beginning of the month or the middle of the month for episode 42. In the meantime, please buy my plays. They are now out, available on Amazon. Two plays by Greg Klein, Sunset Painting and The Sun. And I will see you guys next month.